This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. We've got some legislative drama down in Texas to share with you a little later this hour. An NSA intelligence soulmate of leaker Edward Snowden tries to convey what it's like to have the entire federal government out for you. And we want to alert you to a discussion of possible summer jobs later this hour. Actor Adrien Grenier joins us for a discussion of entrepreneurship you probably won't hear on CNBC. But we begin with what now? A common question after the U.S. Supreme Court resets the deck on major questions of law. Today, we anticipate the court's term will finally come to an end with two decisions on the definition of marriage. But already, election officials around the country are contemplating what yesterday's decision on the Voting Rights Act means in their counties and districts. In a 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court struck down Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, which declared certain areas of the country in need of special federal oversight because of their history of racial discrimination. The court's opinion in Shelby County versus Holder was not welcomed by the Obama administration yesterday. Here's Attorney General Eric Holder on the losing side.
We will not hesitate to take swift enforcement action using every legal tool that remains to us against any jurisdiction that seeks to take advantage of the Supreme Court's ruling by hindering eligible citizens' full and free exercise of the franchise.
But Texas Attorney General Greg Abbott, speaking yesterday from one of the states where Section 4 will now no longer carry authority, says the Voting Rights Act, in his view, still stands.
All other portions of the Voting Rights Act still apply. All the guarantees to ensure that everyone has equal access to voting still apply. All this does is to ensure that all states in the country are going to be treated exactly the same under the Constitution.
And Butch Ellis, the Shelby County, Alabama attorney who argued the case before the Supreme Court, says other counties should look to Shelby County as a model of voter participation.
We have just now, in a population that's probably 90% white or close to it, we've just elected a black member of the County Board of Education in a countywide race over a white incumbent.
But Sherrilyn Ifill, president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense Fund, told NPR's Nina Totenberg yesterday that this decision is essentially a nullification of the Voting Rights Act.
This decision by the court is a game changer and leaves virtually unprotected minority voters in communities all over this country.
Well, let's find out. Representative Terry Sewell is a Congressional Black Caucus member from Alabama's 7th District. Congresswoman, welcome.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Do you feel vulnerable? Do you feel communities that you represent are vulnerable now because of this decision?
Absolutely. You know, I'm a native of Selma, Alabama, and now I represent the voting rights and the civil rights district of Alabama, Montgomery, Birmingham, Selma. And I can tell you that the hard-fought victories on that Edmund Pettus Bridge the injustices that were suffered have not been fully vindicated. And while progress has been made, there's still much work to be done, especially in Alabama.
What do you make of Butch Ellis's saying that in a 90% white district, a black member of the County Board of Education in a countywide race won? That indicates that times have definitely changed, that maybe the events on that bridge have had an impact.
Well, look, I'm not saying that progress hasn't been made, but in Shelby County, in the Shelby County case that went up before the Supreme Court, the facts of that case show discriminatory action. The reality is that the city of Calera in Shelby County had held an election, had a redistricting plan that excluded, and therefore the election result was that the black elected official lost his seat. They didn't get it pre-cleared, and so once the Justice Department came in and through pre-clearance, they had to redraw the lines. That black incumbent city council member got reelected. So I can't necessarily go to the intent of that redistricting plan, but I can tell you that the effect of it was discriminatory, and it excluded the minority protections. So I just think that it was a very sad day yesterday, not only for the nation, but for the state of Alabama. And those of us who are from Alabama, who know how people marched and prayed on that bridge, it's up to us to try to make sure that we vindicate it by having Congress act swiftly. So I can only hope that we in Congress will get our acts together and come up with a coverage formula that will once again make the Voting Rights Act have the enforcement that it needs.
All right, then two questions, Congresswoman Sewell, before we go. Number one, would you support a preclearance formula for all counties that attempt to change their legislative districts, their electoral districts, their electoral laws under any circumstances everywhere in the country?
I would, because the reality is that we should be about protecting people's right to vote and expanding the right to vote, access to the right to vote, and not restricting it. So if the choice is the current regime under the Supreme Court and actually sweeping in all states, all counties, all districts, having the full protections of the Voting Rights Act, I would choose the latter.
And finally, do you believe that it's open season now for districts around the country to change their laws in anticipation of the 2014 election?
I absolutely do. In fact, what we witnessed with Texas and North Carolina attorney generals saying that their restrictive voting ID laws will go into effect immediately, that was a response yesterday. I'm just waiting for the attorney general in the state of Alabama to do the same. And I just think that that is open season in violating the intent of the Voting Rights Act. And so I just hope that we in Congress can act swiftly. It's incumbent upon us to do so.
Democratic Congresswoman Terry Sewell from the Alabama 7th Congressional District. Congresswoman, thanks so much.
Thanks.
All right. So if there is no longer a preclearance requirement for changes in voting laws and district boundaries under Section 4 of the Voting Rights Act, are states free now to revamp the system without federal oversight? Well, Congresswoman Sewell believes they are. Proposed laws on voting requirements in Florida, for instance, that until yesterday could have been stopped by the Justice Department so they could not have an impact on a pending election, can now proceed with a simple vote in the state legislature. Sharon O'Halloran is a professor of international and public affairs law at Columbia University. Welcome, Sharon.
Thank you.
And let's talk a little bit about how this does change the situation. Under Section 4, if you try to change something, you have to prove to the Justice Department that you're not doing something that violates the disenfranchisement intent of the Voting Rights Act. Now you can pass a law in Florida that changes a district or changes a voter ID requirement and get it passed. And the only recourse is for, if I'm in that district, to file a lawsuit and basically take it back to the Supreme Court under Section 2. Is that how
That's
it works?
Correct. So Section 4 is the coverage formula that defined what districts would be covered under the preclearance provisions of Section 5. They did not invalidate the preclearance provisions, which is actually important. What they did do was invalidate the Section 4 coverage formula, which said those districts that had these historic patterns of discrimination dating from 1964 were that formula was unconstitutional because it did not take into account the existing realities within the current demographics and so on.
So preclearance in theory is still constitutional, but there's no formula in there.
That's
so
correct.
It's kind of moot.
So it's mute. So by defining Section 4 unconstitutional, you in essence make Section 5 mute. Now, the Section 2 requirements that prohibit discrimination based on, you know, disenfranchising voters or not allowing people literacy tests and all the things,
Jim Crow
laws.
Range of
those still exist. Those laws that prohibit those types of discriminatory actions still exist under Section 2. So your statement is correct. However, the decision yesterday really did two things. First, it shifted the burden of proof for minorities to show that in the first case, it was that the states proposing the changes actually had to show it had no discriminatory effect, to now that the minority showing that it does have a discriminatory effect.
Now, that means – and I think most Americans have an intuitive sense that, well, if you can take it to court, then everything's going to be fine. But in this particular case, I've got to prove that the law on voter ID, for instance, is discriminatory against people in my community.
That's
if I'm
right.
A racial minority. And that means that it's got to work in a couple of elections. So it's got to actually be implemented.
So you have to show that both the intended impact of this law is actually to discriminate against minorities. That's That's exactly right. And the second thing is it shifts the status quo. Before, the status quo was if it wasn't approved, it goes back to the previous law. Now, if it doesn't get overturned, it goes back to the changed law.
So politically, if there was a racist legislature
yes.
that wanted to enact something,
yes.
they could basically roll the dice and
That's
say,
correct.
Well, you know, maybe someone will sue, maybe they won't sue. We can try this out.
That's right. And the burden, given that the burden of proof is now much harder for minorities to actually show both intent and impact, it in fact means that many of those Republican-controlled state legislatures will in fact roll that dice. Whether they're trying to
well,
be
– maybe, although we don't want to say Republicans are racist. Right. We don't – you know what I mean? Like, we
but,
want
to... but the point is – and that's not to say that the Republicans are racist. That's not the point. The point is to state that it's in their demographic interest to try and do this for the 2014 election. So they're going to be strategic since minorities tend to vote more Democratic, that they are going to try and redistrict and use laws that are going to actually – not maybe not – limit the voter participation of those groups in favor of their own.
And without preclearance, there's nothing that stands in their way.
Without preclearance, there's no pretest, no test to show that before that law goes in effect, it will potentially have a discriminatory effect. Again, this is not to say that the Republicans or any legislature is trying to act in a mischievous way, but it is to say that, in fact, this becomes a strategic political endeavor as opposed to just a straight up, how do we ensure the enfranchisement of all of groups into the voting patterns.
All right. So then two things. Number one, do you support the idea that Congresswoman Sewell seems to endorse, and that is a preclearance requirement any time election officials attempt to deal with these kinds of district rules or voter ID rules? Anytime you change the rules of an election, you have to get it pre-cleared with the Justice Department.
I think that's extreme. I think that will not be a political viable option on the table. I think if in her position, I would actually put it out there and push for it, knowing that you're going to have to compromise. And I think realistically what you want to look at is more recent elections into where you've seen actually voter turnout, registration, and the impact of the ability of minorities to elect candidates of a choice on a district level where they have not been able to succeed. And under those recent demographic and election turnouts, you'll be able to find the districts that need, shall we say, special oversight. And I think that will be a more palatable way that you'll be able to go. And in essence, when you look at the court's decisions, they were saying it's not that preclearance is the problem. It's that you based it on 1964 data and with realities that may no longer be true today.
Right. All right. Finally, do you think this creates a kind of Citizens United-like change in the game, as Sherrilyn Ifill was talking about, in that people who design districts, people who come up with these kinds of regulations are going to have a kind of a field day?
Well, they're no longer going to face the types of constraints that they did previously, that to ensure that will this pass preclearance DOJ muster. They will be much more free in drawing the and the lines that will not necessarily say, do we have to keep majority-minority districts intact? Do we have to make sure that we have this type of historic pattern in there? And those were always the constraints on the map.
And that's a kind of freedom that disturbs you.
That is the freedom that disturbs me.
Sherrilyn O'Halloran is a professor of international and public affairs at Columbia University. Today, the Supreme Court hands down two landmark decisions on same-sex marriage. We want your view on that decision. Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE or leave us a comment at thetakeaway.org. Sharon, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.